Welcome to another special episode of Atlanta's only pro-business radio talk show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Buckhead, inside the Business Radio X studios.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. Rich Kasten over here, the host for this episode of It's a special episode for Buckhead Business Radio. This is a pilot show we've been kind of kicking around for a while. It is the food and beverage radio show. Actually, it's got a lot of traction, and we predict this will ramp up to a weekly show. But right now, we've brought in some high-profile people within the industry, some thought leaders, industry executives, and folks that have their hands in and outside the dishes or the kitchen or bringing new products to the marketplace and all that good stuff. So having said that, we're just going to say hi to the folks in the studio real quickly and then start off with our first interview. So if you want to just kind of each introduce yourself, and we'll start with Kevin. What would be actually tell us your name, company name, what you might be chatting about today?
Thanks, Rich. My name is Kevin Peek. I'm with Kaja Popcorn. I'll be talking about gourmet popcorn in Atlanta.
Oh, man. Yeah, I went to your website, and it's quite a bit of offering than your typical popcorn. Right?
Absolutely.
Don't give away too many. How many flavors are? What's the newest flavor? Maybe let's start with that.
The newest flavor we have this month is bacon, cheddar, and chive.
Oh man, I was driving somewhere up near past the what is it? The hotel right up here, not the Grand Hyatt, but the Ritz-Carlton. I swore in the morning I smelled bacon. I mean, it was like they must have been just pushing it out during the morning drive but there's something about bacon, right? Especially in the South.
Super popular.
Yeah. What about other parts of the country? Is it maybe not so much in
everybody loves bacon.
Okay, there you go. Good answer.
It's universal.
Good answer.
Everybody loves bacon.
Okay, nice. All right, let's introduce our next guest here joining us in the studio. If you all want to just say hi to the folks and introduce yourself.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Fabrice Verger, a.k.a. Fab.
Okay.
I used to have a French-American brasserie downtown.
Okay.
And brasserie, of course, before. I've been in the city for about 20 years.
Wow.
And I'm here to talk about F&B and upcoming promotion like Bastille Day, which is coming next Tuesday,
right?
And other things of that nature.
I got to get my Bastille cards out in the mail, but in time here, right?
Well, we just went through the 4th, you know, and when was that? 1776.
Right, yeah.
And the French one is what, 1789?
Okay.
Close by.
Yeah,
long
time
ally. And I don't know if you're aware, but they just rebuilt Lafayette's boat, the Alien.
Oh, really?
Which actually just took them 12 years, just crossed the Atlantic.
Wow.
And just reached America. And it's the exact replica of the boat that General Lafayette, who Washington considered as his own son, just landed to America, is going to do the whole course for the next 6 months, I believe. So it should be interesting.
Wow. So food and beverage radio, we're learning some history here. Who knew? But it took them 12 years to cross the ocean?
No, it took them about a little over a year,
okay,
about 13 months, I believe. But they went through budget issues. And
right, yeah.
But they used the actual tools and wood that would use then.
Well, I love stuff like that. I love the History Channel. And we'll look forward to this conversation continue. And you also brought in the studio here. Joining you is?
Philippe Haddad. Hello, everyone.
Hello. And you are the executive chef there?
Yes.
I hope so, because that's what it says on your jacket.
Yeah, it is my jacket. I didn't steal anyone's.
Right. Good to know. So, but no samples this afternoon, huh?
If we had none earlier, we might have, but you know what?
Next time.
Just for your auditors, you know, so that they can understand what we say, what we chew.
Yeah. Plus, it is radio. It's hard to kind of smell all the aromas in the cooking already. But next time, we're going to make that a requirement on food and beverage radio.
Yes, sir.
All right, gentlemen, look forward to your conversation and joining us in the studio. Also is Jamie. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rich. My name is Jamie Foster, and I am the founder of Georgia Grinders Premium Nut Butters. And we produce natural almond butter, Georgia Grinders peanut butter, and Georgia Grinders cashew butter in a facility that we own and operate right here in Chamblee.
Oh, wow. And I saw your website as well and your information. Maybe a peanut butter popcorn might be in the works by the end of the show here.
I like it.
Yeah, but and almond. I mean, that's just like I love the almond milk. I'm hooked. That's all I drink, right?
All things almond.
Yeah. So you guys are going to put like the almond growers on the map, or I mean, their stock must be crazy right now, right? With you jumping in the mix.
Once we get some rain in California, definitely.
that wouldn't hurt, right? Yeah. All right. Welcome to the show. So we're going to learn about almond nut butter and all the good stuff there, and probably some recipes, I guess.
Absolutely.
And your backstory. Okay. Look forward to that. Our first guest joining us in the studio Mark, help me with your last name. I'm sure I'm going to mispronounce it.
Sure, Rich. It's Mark Haiti.
Haiti.
It's French.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Well, mispronounced French, but it's French nonetheless.
Actually, I'm a quarter Irish, Italian, French, and Spanish. So I get
it. Makes you American, right?
Well, no, I guess, yeah. Second generation. All right, back to our food program, already in progress after the history lesson here. Yeah. So, Mark Haiti, you spent your career helping businesses improve. Your background includes consulting, launching independent restaurant group, investing in hospitality and technology businesses, chairing a nonprofit organization, and serving as a CFO, publicly traded technology company. Perpetual builder, operator and problem solver with a passion for small business. As you've built companies, brought businesses, transformed organizations, designed new products, helped. And now currently, because you were on the show quite some time ago, almost like in our early days of the studio.
I think it was the first pilot episode of the hospitality food
and
beverage.
Yeah. And so returning now, and you're currently launching in the process Orderly, which is to address the fact that independent restaurants are being left behind by the technology. And one of your mottos is it's time for a change, right?
That's right.
Okay, so kind of covered your background. Is there anything else to add to that? Well, tell me about your restaurant experience, I guess.
Sure, yeah. I, with a partner, opened up a restaurant almost 4 years ago now called Taqueria in Midtown. It's a Korean-Mexican restaurant. And my partner, Thomas Lee, who's been a chef in the Atlanta area for many years, opened a restaurant called Hankook Taqueria. Okay. Probably about 6 or 7 years ago, and I helped him open his second location, and we just opened our third location last year in the Dunwoody area.
Well, so you still have your hands in that?
I do, yep.
Okay.
As these guys know, once you get your hands in a restaurant, it's hard to get them out.
Right, exactly. You get hooked to whatever.
That's
yeah.
right.
all right, so kind of fast forward to Orderly. I mean, before we jump into why did you create this, what's your value proposition, I guess, there?
Sure. Yeah. Well, with Orderly, what we try to do is help independent restaurants like the one that I've owned and been part of really simplify the operations. You find that in a restaurant, it could be crazy, chaotic. There's not a lot of time to organize the team, the staff, much less think proactively about how to improve your operations, improve your processes, and ultimately save time and money. So we set out to build a set of technology tools to help restaurants basically get orderly and that get their things together,
right?
and to help them simplify their operations. We've started in the back of house, so how they manage their food costs, how they order their products, and soon to help them manage their inventory and taking their inventory. So really focused on helping drive down food costs wherever we can, provide better information, better reporting, and help the operators have a simple way to use technology, not have to spend thousands of dollars on implementation and hardware, et cetera. And it's all web-based and very easy to use.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think these gentlemen would agree as well. You're spinning a lot of plates when you're running a restaurant. And if you don't keep an eye on that, I mean, that can get out of control real quick, right?
Yeah, I mean, we find it's easy to leave money on the table.
Right.
Right. I mean, without putting the right focus on it and without having the processes and controls, whether that's product that walks out with employees, customers, suppliers, things go bad. Having your hands, tightly around your food cost and managing all aspects of it can bring a lot of money to the bottom line of a restaurant.
So I imagine being cloud-based, you can monitor this kind of remotely.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything we do is built to be accessed from anywhere. So the operator doesn't have to be don't have to be in the restaurant constantly. They can get alerts. They can see what's happening. They can take action from wherever they are.
And that's a key probably principle there is being able to kind of take action and circumvent any before things get too far along in the process. And all of a sudden, the end of the month or your quarterly review, all of a sudden, why are the numbers adding up? Something's missing here, right?
Right, right. And what we find is that restaurants kind of fall into two categories. One, they either don't have the information they want to have to manage their business, or if they do have it, they're investing an awful lot of time tracking it. They don't have great tools to do it, and it's very time-consuming. So those that have a thirst for data and use it to run their business, it tends to be very inefficient to get their hands on it. And then those that just don't have the time and energy to do that find themselves managing blindly.
Well, they could, I mean, they could take time, but then it takes away from their primary focus, like the old adage of do what you do best, outsource the rest, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or systematize the rest.
Yeah, I mean, nobody likes to deal with the administrative part of the business. Right, yeah. Nobody likes keying invoices into Excel.
Right.
Nobody likes...
I'm sure there's somebody out there that's just like would argue that point with you.
There's probably somebody.
They wake out of bed right out of the morning like, oh, man.
But they tend to not grow up and want to run restaurants.
Yes, this,
or
this
be chefs
true.
Or...
Yeah,
or do that. So, you know, we find we can kind of relieve people of the need to get involved in that and put their time with the guest, with coaching employees, with helping improve their operations and not with the administrative tasks.
Well, you think about like a CPA or a numbers cruncher or somebody in that mode, very analytical, that's really thrives on that kind of stuff, right? As opposed to a restaurateur is typically much more... you know, vibrant, outgoing, is much more, is not, is kind of a more of a big picture kind of person. Yes,
right.
Or yes?
Yes or yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the restaurant industry attracts creative types, people who have a energy for customer service and a passion for the business. And not 100% of the time, but most of the time, those people aren't the same folks that like to do the books. They don't like to do, you know, deal with the numbers, et cetera.
Yeah. So, and I'd imagine there's other similar offerings that the industry has, you know, available. What I think is kind of unique to what you're bringing to the marketplace in Orderly, that you have been in the trenches, in the weeds, so to speak, and you've run the restaurant from both sides of the counter and so forth, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's really two things that converged for myself and my partners to start Orderly, and that was one, we had worked as executives in restaurant retail technology for most of our career. So we built technology, we provided technology to the largest restaurant chains in the country. Built products for all types of restaurants, retailers, and operators across industry. That combined, you know, so we knew what technology could do, and we knew what the larger operators were getting out of technology. That combined with the firsthand experience of running an independent restaurant group made me realize there was really a gap in the market. There was a lot of technology for the big chains, but the independent restaurants really didn't have the tools they needed in the back of house, and they weren't simple enough, and they weren't geared towards a user who didn't have a large organization behind them. And so what we did is set out to build simple tools that any operator can use to get the advantages that some of the bigger chains have without having the cost and infrastructure required to take advantage of the technology that is out there.
Yeah, because I would imagine the larger chains, they can afford a very sophisticated, a lot of moving parts and pieces to that type of technology because it's scalable, because they're going to implement it throughout 1,200 locations or more or whatever, right?
Yeah, so they can invest in it. They can have teams on implementation.
Right.
You know, I don't know of many restaurant groups that have 5, 10, 15, even 20 locations that can afford to have a team to go implement technology.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. So so how has this improved or impacted, you know, restaurants? Do you have a story to tell or what? I mean, what are some takeaways if I was a restaurateur considering purchasing this? What would be, you know, some those advantages, I guess, or?
Yes. So some consistent feedback we get from our customers. One is across all customers, we're able to help them save time, which we've talked about as a valuable commodity in a restaurant. So we're able to help them reduce the amount of time they spend on manual entry of data, dealing with the ordering process, which is a very archaic kind of phone call, fax, email process today. So we help automate that. And we're soon to help automate the inventory taking process, which is a timely process as well. So number one, we're able to save everybody time.
Yeah.
Two, we're able to help them save money by giving them better data and information so that they can manage their food cost. You know, what you measure is what you're going to manage. And so we give them the measurements to help them manage that, to improve their margins on their menu items, to better price their products, and to generally manage down costs of commodity products that they're purchasing. And so those are really the two big things we give restaurants back, time and money.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's a fairly popular benefit.
I would say so, yeah. Okay, so two more questions. What about someone considering jumping into the restaurant, you know, business as a former and current restaurateur and been in and out of the industry? What are some tips or pointers or advice?
Yeah, so I think as a person who was crazy enough to get in it myself, and I've now seen thousands of restaurant operators that we've worked with and that I've worked with in the past. And I would say one of the things I would make sure people are prepared. There's probably two or three things to be prepared if you're going to start a restaurant. One is be prepared to run it like a business, because it is.
And even though if you have a passion for food and guest service and all that, that's required, but you have to be able to run it like a business, and that means setting budgets, having plans, really thinking through how you're going to drive the profits of the business. And, you know, obviously that's where we try to help people get a hold of that, number one. Number two, make sure you capitalize it correctly. People tend to start restaurants and put enough money in to get opened and right. don't realize that the doors don't burst open on day one and then cash starts piling in.
Really?
Yeah, I mean... it did for
got
me.
Got a couple
time,
of people nodding course. Their heads here, yeah.
But yeah, you've got to have deep enough pocket to keep the business going for the first year and really build the business over time. And there's not a lot of shortcuts to building a business, whether it's a restaurant or a technology company, you name it. You've got to be prepared for the long haul and to really capitalize yourself for
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And then the third thing I would say for a restaurant operator is make sure you know what's different about you. There is an explosion of restaurants, particularly in right. this market. And it gets hard to sort out who's who and where do I go. So I think it's important for any restaurant operator to know what makes me different and how am I going to get that message across to the consumer.
That's got to be an interesting balance to be different, but also appeal to enough of, you know, the masses, so to speak, or a large enough audience. You can't really appeal to the masses per se, but a large enough audience that you can make a little livelihood out of it, make a yeah. go of it. So final question here is, what about... what's the timetable here, or how long in the process is Orderly? Out of beta test, it's, you know, operational, but how many people are engaged, and is it outside of Atlanta, or what's your
yeah,
goal?
Yeah,
we
started in Atlanta. Sure. We expanded into the DC market. We now have hundreds of users on our solution.
Wow.
We're well out of beta. We've got an ordering product that we've had in the market for several years now.
Okay.
We've got our, we call it our Get Control product, which is a product we sell. It's kind of a basic product to help people get control of their business. It pulls in invoice data, gives you reporting on your food costs, and gives you very actionable information. That's a great product we just released earlier this year that we give a 30-day free trial and get people up and running and help them get organized.
Nice.
And then in the next few months, we'll be releasing our inventory product, and that's in beta right now. So.
Okay.
Where do we want to be? We started to expand in the last few weeks, really nationally,
yeah.
marketing our product, and we hope to be in thousands of restaurants across the country in the near future.
Nice. We'll look forward to having you back for some updates on that. So remind our listeners, what's the best way to find out about Orderly?
Best way is the internet.
Right.
GetOrderly.com.
Okay, so that's the domain name.
Yep.
One more time.
GetOrderly.com.
All right, and all your other social media handles there are there as well, right?
Yep, and we're all over social media. We
nice.
Have Twitter, Instagram, you
nice.
Know, all the Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for being here. Stick around. We may have some follow-up questions here for you. But joining us up next in the studio, just reminding our listeners, you're listening to Food and Beverage Radio, and based here in Atlanta, but streaming around the world. So if you're tuning in, feel free to chat with us, and all this information will be posted on the website as well. And the Twitter handle for the new show is FNB Radio or Twitter at FNB Radio. So, and also just go to foodandbeverageradio.com is the website. All right. So, joining us now, wait a minute. I had your name here. Jamie. All right. Is joining us here in the studio. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And you're with Georgia Grinders. Now, you have about a two-page bio here, your backstory. So if you don't mind, if I read the whole thing, I'd screw it up, and then we wouldn't have time for your interview. So maybe just share with our listeners, kind of tell us your, you know, backstory and how this kind of, before you got into what you're currently doing, I mean, how did you end up doing what you're doing?
Well, who doesn't love food and beverage?
Oh, right? Exactly.
No, in all seriousness, I've always had a passion for cooking, for entertaining, experimenting in the kitchen. However, I landed a career out of college into medical sales. Fantastic life, traveled all over, made a great living. But at the end of the day, I had lost the passion for what I was doing and was looking to reinvent myself and really focus on what makes me happy, what makes my children happy, my husband, and really live our life. So both my husband and I have the entrepreneurial spirit. We had looked at buying different businesses, starting different businesses, and at the end of the day, we kept coming back to food.
Right.
So we started doing a lot of market research, And a lot of people discouraged us from doing it. You know, the margins are tight. You're going to be fighting for shelf space in the supermarkets. You know, there's a lot of fantastic products out there already that you're going to be competing with. So good luck. And we thought, well, perfect.
Right. And what I do see here is that it's kind of started originally 2012 at a farmer's market.
That's correct. So once we decided to move forward with our business, which is now known as Georgia Grinders Premium Nut Butters, we did focus initially on natural almond butter.
Right.
Again, focusing on that niche product.
Absolutely.
Almond butter. So it's based off of my grandfather's recipe from the 70s.
Oh,
and
really?
This is what I grew up eating, and it just truly did not compare to what was in the marketplace. So after doing a lot of research, product testing, you know, we made the decision to move forward and turn it into a business. And so we did start up farmers markets.
And some of your accolades here, it says, tell us about, you added some additional flavors, natural almond. It was featured in Oprah's magazine.
That's right. we were very honored to be featured as Oprah's favorite nut butter in July of 2013. And to time that feature, we also launched additional flavors of our almond butter. So we have a honey roasted flavor, a maple caramel, and then a salt-free flavor of natural almond.
That's interesting. The salt-free version, a lot of people are very health conscious, are cautious about that. So that must have springboarded when you tag your product to Oprah and it's like a game over. At least it's a good kickstart, right?
Definitely a great kickstart, and what really allowed us to take our business to the next level and expand our facility and product offerings.
And so what kind of makes you unique? Because we often ask business people, and even like Mark was saying, when you open a restaurant, you got to be able to stand out a little bit and bring something new or different, you know, different spin. So what's, I guess, your unique selling proposition, if you will?
Well, for starters, we own and operate our manufacturing facility right here in Chamblee. We do not outsource any part of the production process. And that allows us to really control the quality, the freshness of our product, our inventory. Also, what makes us unique is that our facility where we produce our almond butter is 100% peanut free.
Wow.
So that we can really accommodate those with peanut allergies.
And what's the challenges with going to a co-packer? Is that some of the issues you just mentioned of the peanut issue? But also, it seems like you could reduce your cost, but to you, it's more about controlling the final outcome? Or
well, there's truth to everything you said there. First of all, we weren't able to find a co-packer that could meet our needs.
Wow.
We're a very small business, and a lot of the co-packers would have required us to invest in pallets of product. And while we could have done that, you know, we pride ourselves on offering the consumer the freshest product available. We warehouse very little product, and we didn't want to be sitting on this inventory that might not be sold off for another 6 to 8 months.
Right.
And so it, you know, as we continue to grow and have really been able to reduce our costs, you know, having that competitive advantage of operating our manufacturing facility, it does allow us to control the quality of our product, again, offer the peanut-free alternatives.
Absolutely. It kind of reminds me of, I'm a big fan of Shark Tank, and also, what's the one, Profit, with Marcus Lemoines, I think. And he was actually here in town at an event we were involved in, but on the show, they had a similar thing where somebody's trying to bring in the new food product, and you think, just outsource it to a food packer, mm-hmm. but it's not, or co-packer, it's not that easy.
It isn't that easy. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, more and more people are focused on where their food is coming from,
right.
where it's being made. They want to know who's behind it
right.
all. And we can tell that story and really separate us from the other brands out there.
Absolutely. Speaking of Shark Tank, so you probably get that question every other day or once a day? Or
about once a day lately,
yeah.
yes.
Right. Is anything, do you see that as a possibility or of interest? Or
absolutely. We've been toying with the idea and would love to try out for it and hopefully be a part of it in the near future.
Yeah, they love food products on there, and they get all excited. And man, even if you get a deal or don't get a deal.
Right.
I mean, but I hear they take a percentage right out front, as it depends upon the arrangements and all that stuff. Yeah,
I hear that too, as well as sales for the next 5-7
well,
years.
Only if you go through Mr. Wonderful, whatever. Yeah, he always
well,
puts
even
his hand
if you don't, from what I understand, too. But regardless, we would be honored.
Yeah, because if you go
Shark
from
Tank.
you know, here to the moon, you know, go ahead and give away some of the almond butter, right?
You got it.
All right. So let's talk about where your products are sold. Where could people find it?
Currently, our products are being sold in Whole Foods, Sprouts Farmers Market, the Fresh Market stores, Kroger in the Southeast regions. We work with some chains up in the Northeast, King's Market and Balducci's. There's a chain out of Texas, Central Market. And the specialty gourmet shops have been extremely supportive of our products.
And to get those in there, do you go through a, is there someone that does that, or are you literally locking on the door yourself? Or?
I'm using my sales background and knocking on a lot of doors and learning from mistakes and definitely having success at the same time.
Well, the closest store I can walk to is Publix. So, I mean, is that on the horizon?
Absolutely.
Or, yeah, you're in talks with them, I imagine?
We are, currently.
Well, call me as soon as it's on the shelf.
You got it.
All right. So, so the Grinders, Georgia Grinders label, I mean, how did you come up with that name? Or is there other products in the offering or for the future? Or?
Well, initially we launched natural almond butter as our primary and only product when we got started in 2012. And to expand our product offerings and diversify our portfolio, we looked into our backyard, the state of Georgia, and honor our state nut, the peanut. So it didn't really make sense to say we're now selling natural almond peanut butter or, you know.
Yeah, fill in the blank, yeah.
yeah, exactly. So we looked at rebranding and, okay, where are we located? What do we do? And we kept coming back to Georgia Grinders because it really tells the story of what takes place back in our facility. And it allows us to launch all of our subsequent products under the Georgia Grinders brand.
Right. At first, I thought it was Georgia Growlers or whatever, right?
Well, we might drink some of those.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's how you can a lot of times take a brand and really kind of like give it a lot of legs is you can have that, you know, flavoring of your primary brand in other products like popcorn or we had a lady in for from Vixen Vodka.
Yeah.
Right. And they had what Cinnabon now has like their flavor brand in a vodka. So, I mean, look for almond butter in a beer near you, right?
Absolutely. And we've done a lot of co-marketing with various companies and around town.
Okay, so finally tell us, I am kind of reading through your bio during the conversation here, so we're not leaving, I don't think we've left anything off, but the one thing that's listed on here is you're talking about upcoming expansion in the future. So cashew butter and also individual squeeze packets.
You got it. We actually launched our cashew butter March of this year, so 2015, at Expo West out in Anaheim. And we are currently experimenting with a chocolate coconut peanut butter and almond butter. As well as a, we got to focus on our other state nut, the pecan, and looking at a cinnamon vanilla pecan blend.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, we've expanded our production facility. We have the segregated facilities, the peanut free for the almond butter. And really the sky's the limit as far as nut butters and blends and what all we can do.
Yeah. And finally, I know you can't give away any medical advice or, but when you buy the almond milk, everything on there is just like, all the benefits of higher calcium, less, I buy the sugar, not sugar free, but without sugar because, you know, I don't want a sugar substitute in there, right?
Correct.
But so what are some benefits of the,
Well, almonds and nuts in general have so many health benefits. You know, the number one benefit you see across the board are the heart healthy benefits.
Right.
You know, they've been proven to help lower cholesterol, reduce blood pressure levels. They're high in the healthy fats, your omegas, high in fiber, protein, antioxidants. You know, the little nut packs a punch.
And, oh, nice. You know, that should be your slogan.
Yeah. And, you know, physicians, nutritionists, you know, they're recommending that you incorporate nuts as part of your daily diet.
Absolutely. Okay. So, so finally, remind our listeners, let our listeners know, Jamie, what's the best way for all folks to find out about your product and offering?
Well, number one, go to our website, georgiagrinders.com. And if you don't have one of the retailers that I mentioned earlier, in the segment in your area, you can definitely order online. We ship all over the United States.
All right. So, so check that out. And it's already in a store near you, if not nearby or soon.
That's right.
All right. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And maybe we can work some almond butter into some recipes here at the French Bistro restaurant.
Oh, we're going to have to try to do that. I love experimenting.
Oh, yeah, nice. Okay, so let's introduce our next guest here from F&B. Is it F&B Atlanta? Mm-hmm. French Bistro.
And Jamaican.
And Jamaican.
No.
American.
What?
I'm sorry. I'm thinking about French American Brasserie from that. Okay. This is Food and Beverage LLC.
Yeah.
F&B.
F&B. And then... So where are you all located exactly?
We have 3630 Peachtree Road, which is two blocks north of Phipps, right by the Ritz-Carlton residence. The hotel, the residence.
Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha.
Right at the corner of between Wayuka and Peachtree Dunwoody.
So it's the after show party we're going to be hosting there, right?
That's right.
Yes or yes?
Yes, sir.
Of course.
All right, so y'all have quite an extensive resume too, and so why don't we just kind of jump in and share with us a little bit about your background. And your experience in the hospitality and food industry.
Okay, so I have been in the industry for about 35 years.
Okay.
I started at a very young age, and that's all I've done, really, actually. And I was inspired through my parents. My mom was a very good cook, and it always helps when you eat well at home and you come into the house and the house smells good, has good flavors. And I was never exposed to fast food restaurants and such, so... The big inspiration was one of my family vacations, actually, in Greece in 1975.
But originally from Belgium?
Originally from Belgium,
right?
Yes.
And you attended the most renowned hotel institute in Belgium?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
At the time, of course, now everything changes because of the economy, they want to grow and so on. But at the time, we had 325 students. It was a private...
Wow.
It took about 2 years waiting list. And I had told my parents at 14, that's what I wanted to do. So my father was happy. My mother was not so happy. She would rather have me being a doctor or a lawyer or something.
Right.
But so my mom said to my dad, your son wants to be a cook. And my dad said, so what? Let's see what happens.
Right.
And so we pursued it. It was a fun experience. And I don't regret a minute of it. It's been a great experience. And it's not over yet.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, Fab, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Well, pretty much born in France, made in America.
All right.
My parents had a small restaurant and a ski station in the Pyrenees near Font-Romeu. And that's pretty much how I got into the business. We moved to the French Riviera in Cannes, where I worked for the Carlton Hotel.
Okay.
It used to be Grand Metropolitan Hotel. Now it's Intercontinental. And the GM... offered me a job in England to improve my English. We had a lot of American working there, as guests.
Right.
So I moved to England in Frome, Somerset, small village. I didn't want to go to London, too many French people over there. I was there to improve. I was the only French. So
oh, wow.
I was invited to every party and
pretty much
every fight, too, for some reason. And then after that... I decided to move to America. It's always been a dream of mine.
Okay.
So I went to interview in Lyon for Walt Disney World.
Pardon?
Or Epcot Center.
Oh, okay. Epcot, yeah.
You know, the French Pavilion Epcot Center. They have three French restaurants over there. This is how I came legally in this country, by the way. And that was a great experience, but I wanted more and I had some friends in New York. So I quickly moved to New York and... worked for a caviar restaurant, Petrosian. And then when Le Bernardin opened, the famous four-star seafood restaurant that's been up there since 1985.
Wow.
I opened it with Maggie and Gilbert Lecoz. Was there for almost 10 years. They opened Brasserie Lecoz in Miami. I went over there to train before I opened Brasserie Lecoz here in Atlanta. That used to be located next to Neiman Marcus.
Oh, okay.
I was their GM, became their partner. And then I bought it from Maggie, unfortunately, after Gilbert passed away.
Uh-huh.
And, this is my luck, but they gave me my termination notice 2.5 years later as they were expanding Neiman Marcus and it was sold to Simon Property. Long story short, I moved to downtown, new development by Isle Berry in the Southern Company building and opened French-American Brasserie.
Wow.
Which was a grandiose brasserie. I mean, I had four floors, rooftop, 13,000 square foot, 2,000 square foot rooftop.
Where was that?
It was Ivan Allen, khaki corner to the IRS building.
Okay.
Where the, you know, Khaki Corner to the W downtown.
Right, yeah, okay.
It used to be called William Street, and then they changed it to Ivan Avenue Boulevard.
They didn't change it to Peachtree Road or Peachtree Circle?
I think we got enough.
Exactly, yeah.
So, but long story short, we opened in 07, we planned in 06, and we had a fantastic first year, and then 08 came in.
Yeah.
And yet a lot of project went down there. There was supposed to be the Target and the Publix,
right,
which was going to be a catalyzer for the, you know, residential,
sure,
around. None of this happened. Regardless, I closed in December 2011, but not before I signed the lease up here. And I opened F&B at 3630 Peachtree Road in July 2012. And we're about to celebrate our third year anniversary.
Wow.
As well as Bastille Day.
Nice. So from France to Orlando, Miami, New York City.
England,
Atlanta. I mean, I was in
Carter. That's where I learned to drink beer, actually.
Right. Where, in England?
Oh, yes. I was not a beer drinker, but over there.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, they don't give you a choice.
But you still have wine as well, right?
Oh, yes, sir.
I would imagine, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like a requirement, right? They'll check your passport or yank that from you.
Pretty much.
Okay, so that kind of brings us up to speed. An impressive background from both of y'all. So let's talk about the current restaurant and what inspired y'all to open F&B.
Well, number one, I wanted to come back to Buckhead, mm-hmm, because obviously downtown didn't work out so well. And I had 12 years of fairly successful business up here in Buckhead. A lot of my clientele was there. So I needed to come back, and I was approached by these people and said, look, we got space for you. It's a lot smaller than what you used to have. And I said, you know what? That's exactly what I'm looking for, because right now rents, you know, were very, very high.
Sure.
And I wanted to open a French rustic neighborhood bistro, you know, comfort food, good food.
Right.
There's a thousand ways to make a chicken, and believe me, there's probably 900 ways to make it wrong.
Right. Yeah. I've done all, thankfully, about 800 of those, yeah. So what's the, I don't know if it's fair to ask the favorite dish or go-to, or kind of like we were talking about earlier, kind of what makes you unique.
Well, we used to have a lot of favorites from our customers, like our white bean soup with white truffle oil, mussels marinière, our skate brown butter, niçoise salad, all kind of, you know, we had a lot of staple dish,
right,
from Brasserie-Lecose that people remembered and were looking forward to have again.
So share with me, what's the day in the life of an executive chef? I mean, look like?
Well, I think, first of all, I think that what Mark's suggestion was that the operation is so complicated and there's so many moving parts. And, you know, as a chef, I grew up from the beginning, from a very early stage, all the way to work my way up. To include, when I was working with the luxury brand hotels with the Ritz and Four Seasons, I was a food and beverage director, so I have aspects of both sides, front of the house, back of the house. It kind of gives you a really great, large picture in your mind of what it takes, and it takes a lot more than just cooking.
Right.
20 years ago, I think the chef was just, his job was just come up with some dishes, control the cost if you want, or if you can. It was not really that well monitored, in my opinion, but I think in all the luxury hotels it was the same thing. We experienced that very well, and I think that today the chef is required to be as well as a great chef, a great cook, slash a good businessman, because you have to have a vision of where you need to be, where you have to be, and how do you get there with your staff.
Yeah, speaking of staff, so how many folks do you have, and what does your hours look like? How early you get in there? Imagine pretty early. And
my hours are very flexible, depending on workloads. But okay. Yeah, I do an average of 10, 12 hours a day for sure, 6 days a week.
Wow. I heard somebody say, you know, I was telling an employee, you know, you can just work half days from now on. Doesn't matter. You pick whichever 12 hours you want to work.
I'll work half day for me.
That's a half day.
Like 7 hours.
So tell us about, folks, about y'all. How did y'all come to meet? How do you kind of balance?
That's a good story.
Okay, yeah.
I've known Philippe for pretty close to 20 years from the old time of Brasserie-Lecose, when Philippe used to have his own restaurant named Philippe on Peachtree Hill.
Okay.
So we've been friends for, like I say, almost two decades.
Wow.
However, we never really connected when he came down to business.
Right.
I had my own chef. He has his own thing.
Right.
Then he was consulting for the Ritz-Carlton, and then I moved downtown, and then I went out of business, and then I restarted. And obviously, when I reopened, I was not too happy with my original chef, and I needed to make some improvement, and I needed someone that was thinking in the same line as I was,
right,
which we are mostly French, you know, French, Belgium, same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
It's just a matter of time before French annexes Belgium anyway.
Sorry. Nice.
Okay, we'll talk about you know, it. We're not that far away.
We don't want to internet. We're going to save that for International Business Radio when we get into any fights here or whatever in the studio, yeah.
But one of our most popular dish was the mussels, and he was very good with his own mussels as well. I mean, I had one staple recipe. He had like three or four. So he brought it in, and we had the same vision where the food should be going. We did increase the size of the menu and the quality. And, you know, within the first year he was there, we increased our business by a good 20%. So,
wow,
you know, it was a good recipe.
Okay, so when y'all are not hanging out at the restaurant, what's your guilty pleasure for food, or is there go to? We're not seeing you probably at the drive thru at Hardee's, or
hardly not. No, no, I don't want to be.
You're not
time.
Eating great French cuisine.
I'm
or
French
Belgium.
Already. I don't need to be more condescending than I'm supposed to be. I used to have a guilty pleasure once in a while when I come home late and I just didn't want to cook.
Right.
And I used to stop for a Big Mac.
Okay.
I'm sorry to say that.
What about a varsity or
not anymore?
Okay.
Once I found out for that English chef what exactly was right, in that stuff, I was right, like, you know, not even once every 6 months.
But like Mark was saying, there's so many amazing restaurants here in Atlanta. I don't know the numbers, but I mean, just in Buckhead,
yeah.
I think they've said like there's, you know, 12 of the of all of Metro Atlanta. Some of the highest, you know, grossing are right here out our window. But I mean, and you've been in the city long enough. I mean, what are some, restaurants that is on your short list that you enjoy going to when you have a day off and you don't have to worry or be in the kitchen and all that good stuff? I mean, or types of food. You don't have to mention any competitors necessarily.
I should go first. I have no problem with that. I mean, I've known a lot of my friends that own restaurants in the city for a very long time, and Kevin Redburn is one of them, and we basically, I remember the day he came in from Texas and he took over Nava for Bucket Life. So that's when we started our friendship. Fort Fry, I've known him
long
time. Since
he was here in the studio a while back.
You know, and he's a great guy, and I met him first time in Aspen when he was a sous chef at the Ritz.
Wow.
Who's now becomes a St. Regis. Pano Jr. is a very close friend of mine. I go to Kima. Quite a bit more than I should.
Right.
Just for drinks, not always for dinner.
But
it's great to catch up. And at the end of the night and on Sunday afternoon, I tend to go there sometimes because we have a great camaraderie and friendship. Yeah. You know, the new restaurant, there's a couple of new restaurants in town that are great. They did a great job in the streets of Buckhead. I think, you know, the opportunity is there for everyone. And it depends how you manage the operation and how you. It's no question about it. The competition is fierce. It's getting bigger and bigger.
Right,
when
right.
I started in 87, I was the youngest executive chef in the city of a five-star restaurant called Nikolai's Roof.
Yeah.
And those days, we had 6 months waiting list. And so
jeez.
Today, it was 1.1 million.
Those times are gone.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
1.1 million people. But now, there's 7 million close to it. So the dynamics have changed. The opportunity has changed. Actually, I think it's great. The city has grown, but it's really a lot of restaurants, 12 restaurants in 6 months.
And Fab, what about yourself when you're not?
Well, one of my favorite one, and my fiancée and partner, Cindy Brown, is Aria. I love Jerry Klaskela. I think he does a fantastic job. I also share Philippe's Kima, which I believe to me is the most underrated seafood restaurant in this city. I enjoy going to the fish market, believe it or not.
Right, right.
But it's mostly because my good friend Bobby Holly was the executive chef and was actually with me at Le Bernardin in New York for over 10 years before he moved to Atlanta as well. He's the executive chef. So every time I show over there, I feel you know, I feel like Norm.
Right,
you know, I got my place there. He brings me my glass of Chardonnay.
Nice.
He brings me some crabs and nice oysters. It's also a lot about the company.
Look, what I've noticed about the restaurateurs in the industry is a lot of camaraderie. I think that's kind of different than a lot of other types of businesses. You know, I guess it's just whenever you involve food, people just feel more, you know, we mentioned comfort food. People just feel a natural inclination to, you know, have a glass of wine or, you know.
You know, like I say, we're a neighborhood bistro. We're not pretending to ever become a five-star restaurant.
Right.
But like I said, there's a thousand ways to make a bad chicken. And I know that between Wayuka and Peachtree and Woody, there are kitchens in those houses that probably cost more than mine in my restaurant.
Wow.
And I also know that they never use them. And they eat 5-6 times a day out.
Wow.
And they don't necessarily want to have a foie gras milkshake. You know,
some
foam coming out.
Right,
and some molecular these.
Yeah,
that.
All the artificial
Sometimes
stuff,
they just want to have a good steak fries and a good salad cooked properly, you know, because these guys eat out all the time.
Man, I'm getting hungry just listening to what you're describing, the food there. So let our listeners, what's the best way for all to find out about your restaurant and website or social media? And
well, honestly, I'd just like to for them to come to dinner.
You know?
3630 Peachtree Road.
All right.
Okay, 2 blocks north of Phipps, Khaki Corner to Joseph A. Banks and that BP station. Okay. And you can go on our website and look at our menu at fnbatl.com. That's fandbatl.com.
All right.
And we're going to have our special Bastille Day menu posted fairly soon, which for the in conjunction with our third year anniversary, we're going to offer for the next 5 days after that. It's a great deal, 3-course dinner, $30 a head, in addition to our regular menu. We're not imposing that, but we're going to have decorations, of course, blue, white, and red instead of red, white, and blue. We'll have an accordionist player, live music.
Wow.
And it's usually a lot of fun time.
And that will be a
next
week?
Tuesday.
Next Tuesday. Okay.
July 14th.
The 14th.
It's a good way to go. Thank you to the support of the community for 3 years. I mean,
and next door residents.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there was support us quite a bit.
We just did the 4th of July, and believe me, and for the 4th of July, Philippe had a great idea. If you want to talk about the American Fair and how many covers we did that night.
Yeah, it's actually, we came up with last year with a traditional barbecue, but with a twist to it. And it was basically a family style platters with ribs.
Nice. Nothing French.
Okay. It was all American.
Mix it up, yeah.
It was really traditional American barbecue food, but family style. And it was really great. I mean, we did 170 covers on the 4th of July. I mean,
pulled
you can't
pork,
beat that.
Burgers, you know. Hot dogs. Iceberg salad, watermelon salad. I mean,
everything
that you would have done in your backyard,
right?
Except if you didn't want to cook, you just had to come down,
right?
Yeah,
eat and then go up on the roof and watch the firework.
If people are traveling from other countries, didn't know what was going on, they'd be probably a little confused, right?
Well, we had that posted in advance, and
on
the force, the traffic being what it is, we had very, very few web reservations. Which, as soon as we saw one, we told them, "Look, we're not going to have the regular menu. This is all American tonight, and, you know."
Enjoy it, yeah. All right, gentlemen. A pleasure having you here in the studio. I'm getting hungry just hearing all the food you've been talking about. And
Well, Rich, we're just a few blocks away. So.
Nice. Well, I'll be swinging
just
by.
Just saying.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. And our anchor man joining us here in the studio, waiting patiently, Kevin Peek, is we're going to be talking popcorn.
Talk popcorn all day.
Nice, nice. And you've got a short enough bio. I'm going to give it a shot here. You're the your title, I love it, is the Chief Popper. All right. At the company is pronounced.
It's Kaja Popcorn.
Kaja.
Yep.
And that is French for what?
It's actually Spanish for box.
Okay, yeah.
It's Spanish for box, but it's also my kids' names, Caroline and Jack. So it's a combination of their names.
Oh, nice. I love a backstory right there. And this is Gourmet Popcorn in the store at Peachtree Battle Shopping Center.
correct.
That's where there's a Starbucks over there and a couple of other restaurants.
Starbucks, Jalisco's, Zoe's. So it's a lot of stuff in that shopping center.
Okay. And prior to founding the getting into the popcorn business, you're almost 20 years in the financial services industry. Who are you with?
I did a lot of strategy consulting for banks, with banks. I worked for a regular consulting firm, and then I did a lot of stuff in the financial technology space. So the sort of small world. I used to call on guys like Mark in my prior world when he was in his CFO world, and
right.
So it's kind of interesting.
And you obtained your undergraduate degree in international economics at Georgetown University?
Correct.
So traveled much with that, or
I did a lot of travel in the consulting world, and it was great. Spent a lot of time in Europe and traveled all over the country, and that's sort of actually the reason why I started Kaja Popcorn is because I was sick of the travel and similar to Jamie, just I wanted to have quality of life over. You know, it was cool experiences traveling, but I was looking for something a little more stable.
Yeah, after a while, the romance wears off, would it, right?
Yeah, I mean, for the longest time, I was thankful to have great friends in town, because I would be gone Monday to Friday, and they'd come home and they'd have a bottle of wine, or the social aspect of it would be planned by somebody else. And I'm like, that's kind of not a cool way to live for a really long time.
Right, right. So, so how long has the business been around? What's kind of the backstory, and why popcorn, I guess, you're at?
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting because I don't really have a food background. I don't have my grandfather's recipe.
Right, right.
So we've been open since 2012, so we're actually almost celebrating our three-year anniversary as well, in September. My wife was actually traveling for work, and there are places around the country where they have popcorn.
Right.
And I said, hey, bring me back some. I'd been thinking for a long time about other ideas to leave the corporate world, and I said, hey, bring some popcorn back. And then I started thinking, why don't we have it here?
Right.
I'm good friends with another chef in town. These guys will probably know Todd Ginsberg from the General Muir and Fred's and Yala. Yeah. And so I worked with him, and I said, gosh, can we come up with some really great recipes for popcorn?
Right.
Went through the process, and here we go.
So beyond kettle corn, that's about the only upgrade to popcorn I think I've had recently, right? So what makes this unique? So did you kind of scout out some of the other offerings around the country and settle on your own unique recipes? Or?
Sure. Yeah, so I think it's interesting. So Todd and I developed, mostly him, because I just sort of tested them.
Right.
We worked on, I said, hey, I want a caramel flavor-ish, right. A sweet flavor. I want a cheesy flavor. I want a spicy flavor. And we worked on it. And so we always have sea salt caramel.
Okay.
And nobody in the world makes caramel like we do, because a chef created it. So, if you went to any other place where they make popcorn, it's going to be something off a shelf, gold medal. And they, it's
right, just manufactured.
It's matter of fact. Yeah, manufactured. So we also make a pimento cheese.
Really?
Which is our second most popular flavor, sea salt caramel being our most popular. And then we have a spicy barbecue. It's amazing, but it's pretty spicy.
Really? Comes with a warning?
Comes with a warning. Yeah, I don't let little kids have it because they'll cry. And so we always have those flavors. And then what makes us unique is the fact that we created the flavors with a chef. The fact that we continue to make flavors, so we rotate a flavor, like the bacon, cheddar, and chive. We work with some of the chefs from Concentrix Restaurant Group and then other chefs around the city to create a flavor of the month. But we're an interesting, so working with Jamie potentially, we are completely nut-free. That's super unique. Right. No other popcorn store I've ever heard of is nut-free.
Well, we're nut-free here in the studios typically. Well, except for on Mondays, we got a couple of people
bring some nuts. Yeah, right. We make it fresh every day. We don't use any preservatives, so it's pretty unique, the offering that we have. It's interesting.
So talk to me about kind of your business model. So you have a storefront retail, and then also online sales.
Correct. Yes. Okay. So we have, you can buy popcorn. You can buy popcorn at our website, any day. You can order right now, kajapopcorn.com. So we have really three segments of our market. One is our retail, just consumers walking in, buying popcorn. The second is online. So somebody could order it. We have a popcorn of the month club.
Oh, really? Yeah. I think I saw that on there. And they all come like in tins or whatever,
so
right?
We have tins. Yeah. You can buy one or two or 3 gallon tin. Yeah. We sell bags in the store. Okay. And then our third, which is honestly our biggest by revenue, is sort of our corporate/event space. So we do a lot of custom flavors. We do a lot of custom packaging for our corporate market. And you don't have to be, when I say corporate event, it could be your wedding. You get wedding, you want to have party favors, or you want to have welcome bag things to include in your welcome bag. So we do a lot of that. We did an event 2 months ago. We had 8,000 bags of popcorn.
Jeez.
Over the course of the month. It wasn't all at once, but they were putting their label on it, putting our label on it, getting it around the city. So we do a lot of corporate / event orders.
So you're saying corporate weddings where companies merge and come together?
That's honestly, they'll have you say that
rebranding.
You're only half. I mean, a lot of times they will get together. They'll sort of have this sort of the HR, the feel good, the change management that happens.
Right.
They'll get together and they'll be like, hey, we need some treats for that. So we do a lot of buildings will use us if they have an evacuation drill. So the people, when they're coming back in after having to trudge down 20 stairs, 20 flights of stairs, they'll give them a bag of popcorn to take back up with them.
Some pretty innovative out of the tin or bags that you would expect or whatever marketing ideas.
Yeah, it's great to have the retail store, but I realized pretty quickly after I opened that if I just sat back and waited for everybody to come in the door, and it's great because a lot of it is our biggest form of advertising is sampling, like sample.
Right.
We don't buy print advertising for the most part. It's really sampling, but there's nothing better than even paid sampling. So, somebody's going to go out and give 1,000 bags of our popcorn away. They paid for it.
Right.
And 1,000 people just got introduced to Kaja popcorn.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's great.
Speaking of that, like any, not say catering, but like, venue options like Verizon Amphitheater or somewhere, or it could be distributed or anything.
Yeah, we do some of that. We do sell at a couple of other places around the city. So from a market standpoint, we sell in Decatur at Oakhurst Market. We sell at North Point Mall. We sell at Rome.
ROAM.
Yeah, the gas space. We sell there,
We'll talk to Jamie. She'll knock on the door for you at Whole Foods and get you guys in there.
What's interesting, because we're fresh, part of our, actually my family, I grew up in Arkansas. So I if I want to get into Walmart, I could get into Walmart.
Really?
But I don't want to get into Walmart because that's not our model.
Model
is fresh, high end. If we start selling at Walmart,
it's no longer
the supply chain. I mean, she knows about supply chain, right? I mean, you do want it sitting around for 6 months when your whole model is premium, gourmet, and then oops, but it's been sitting on somebody's warehouse for 4 months. So that's not really our model.
Well, I appreciate that you know kind of your space or whatever, right? And what makes the most sense, because you do need to kind of find that niche that can be profitable. So so how do people, what types of marketing, or how would people find out about you?
Yeah, so they can obviously go to our website at kajapopcorn.com. They can come into our store, Petrie Battle, which we always love chatting with folks. And again, you can find us a couple places around town. But we did, the corporate event, if you ever have if there's a need for, like next week, we just got a call today about next Friday going and showing up with our popcorn, letting people come up, sample it, and then grab a bag. So, I think a lot of folks will come into us and say, oh, I had your popcorn at X event,
right,
or, oh, I got it at, one of the food shows or something else. So we do a lot of that.
Yeah, do you do expos or farmers markets or anything? And you can't cook on site, can you?
We can't. We use commercial equipment to make it. We make small batches. Everything is small batch, but it's a lot of small batches to prepare the popcorn. So we don't do that. Farmers markets are interesting. They're a little bit of a niche. They want to know that you have locally sourced products. A lot of that, which is great, and we would love to do that. Except that the corn that we use is a high-end kernel, and you can't find it in Georgia.
Really?
So if somebody would make it in Georgia, we'd be happy to use it. But it's
where do you have to get that from then? Or
it's Iowa.
Oh yeah,
which is I think about Nebraska, sense. Iowa, where they fields and fields and fields of corn.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's on the horizon? Any new flavors, or how many total flavors can you kind of balance at one time?
So we make 6 flavors at any given time.
Okay.
We also that we have like in the store. But just yesterday, somebody wanted s'mores, which is a flavor that we have in January, every January.
Right.
And they knew that we had it and we could make it, and they wanted it for their child's birthday party. So we made a batch and shipped it to them in New Jersey. So we make all the time. Like, we got an order for some blue kettle corn
really
for somebody's baby shower
Wow.
Later this month. So we do a lot of
specialties,
custom,
like that, yeah.
Special orders. But at any given time, we only have 6 flavors, 5 that we always have, and then 1 that rotates, which is
the month,
like the bacon, cheddar, and chive. We'll have next month we're going to have watermelon, cilantro, and I can't remember what the pepper is. It's not a chili. It's not cayenne, but it's a sort of a pepper like that. Again, the chefs come up with the flavors, and then we figure out how to make it. So it'll be interesting to see how we come up with that flavor.
So again, probably seasonal as well, right? So during the holidays, throughout every holiday throughout the year, you could do a theme.
We do a theme. Yeah. So October, we'll have something pumpkin-y.
Right. Yeah.
October, we do something sort of in the apple world.
Okay.
November, we'll do something with sort of the pumpkin theme. And then December, we have a chocolatey peppermint, which we'd get slaughtered if we didn't have that people love it. And we get requests throughout the year for that. But it's certainly, for the holiday, for December, it's great. And then January, we always have s'mores. In February, we always have red velvet. People love the red velvet.
Oh, big time, yeah. So.
And for February, sort of the Valentine's Day.
So finally, what's your kind of... expansion plans? You look at, franchising or offering this or expanding to other stores, or is the play really like online?
I don't think it's so much online. I think it's going to be a combination of whether it's a store, whether it's whether our next step is sort of a warehouse where we can. When I think of warehouse, it's sort of, I don't think of premium, but a warehouse to do the corporate orders, because we have such a high volume of that.
Right.
It doesn't make sense to make it in our store.
Right. Yeah.
There's no benefit to that. So maybe that, or it could be a food truck. But I think,
is there a popcorn food truck? That's got to be interesting.
Yeah, there's not in Atlanta. There, I have seen them in other cities though.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, it's a pleasure having everybody here today and talking French restaurants, talking almond butter and popcorn. And for all the restaurants listening out here, they can expedite and maximize their cost and overhead, right, through Orderly. So we are out of time, unfortunately. So thanks for everyone for tuning in, being here. All of our guests for being on the show. Rich Casanova here for another episode of Food and Beverage Radio. We'll see you next time.